This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today with Al Sharp, who's the executive director of the Protestants for the Common Good. We're talking about education funding reform, among other things. Al, can you hear me all right on your phone?
Yes, I certainly can.
Great. Thanks for giving up part of your Sunday to talk with us about what Protestants for the Common Good does. And one of your big pushes right now is for trying to affect how the state funds public education. Why is this group interested in that?
Well, we think a fundamental moral issue is involved. We think it's simply wrong, and one doesn't use these words carelessly, but I will use it in this instance. That the amount of money one spends on a child's education in Illinois depends on the neighborhood, indeed the wealth of the neighborhood in which they were born. In a democracy where equal opportunity is the way to enable all people to have the chance to flourish, how can it be just to say that if you're in a property-rich district, you can spend up to $20,000 or $25,000 per kid on education, and if you're in a poor property area, you're spending $5,000 or $6,000 per kid. Again, we think that's not morally defensible. That's an issue that's been around forever in Illinois. It's because of what I implied in my comment that so much of our education funding comes from property taxes. The state only spends about 28%, provides only 28% of funding for kids. And that makes us 49th in the country on that scale. So for all those reasons, and because this has been around for such a long time, we're pushing real hard right now.
So we're ahead of what state? Mississippi?
Oh, I don't know.
I think I remember that. Ralph.
Maybe we're not even ahead of Mississippi. I don't know. And some of these measures, we're 49th out of 50. We're literally 49th, if not 50th. And I doubt Mississippi is the 50th, on the disparity between what we spend on rich kids and what we spend on poor kids.
And that's because
of the size of the gap.
And that's because of it's based on property tax.
Exactly.
Right.
Very simple concept.
Right. And so we have this notion in this country of local school boards and
yep.
Parents and other interested people making decisions for those kids, but what can be done if there's that huge difference in the amount of money that's available to spend?
Exactly. And just so your listeners aren't confused, this has nothing to do with who will control decisions at the local level, nor did you imply that, but it's easy to slide from one to the other. This is about the amount of funding that's made available, not about control over that money once it is available.
Right.
Now, someone might argue in a more airy way that money implies control, but I haven't heard that even on the part of legislators as a reason for opposing this.
So what exactly is Protestants for the Common Good trying to do right now?
We're trying to affect legislation, House Bill 750 or Senate Bill 855, both of which are present in kind of what's called shell form, the outline of a bill, but the specifics still to be filled in, but what we're hoping will be part of that legislation. We're trying to get those bills passed, and one in the House, one in the Senate. And it would call for a 5% income tax as opposed to the 3% that we now have. It would call for a broadening of the sales tax to cover services. We don't cover any services in our sales tax now. And it would call for property tax relief in those areas where property values are low so that when you do have an increase in the income tax, you're not hit with a double whammy of an increase in the property tax and the income tax. So it's very specific legislation. And, you know, Steve, this is not new. I've been heading Protestants for the Common Good since 1996. The first meeting I went to before I was even officially on the payroll was at Fourth Presbyterian Church in New York City. Governor Jim Edgar, going back that far, Governor Jim Edgar.
In Chicago.
In Chicago, yes.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Jim Edgar had announced this very same plan. He had created a very prestigious planning group headed by the then chancellor of the University of Illinois. So your folks would remember this history. They had come up with this very same plan. The concepts are simple, they're clear, and they're fundamentally sound. Unfortunately, the The plan was going to be announced. It was leaked first to the Chicago Tribune, who published a headline, "Dead on Arrival." That was a headline, and it took all the momentum out of the plan. My point being that in my time, this has been around for 12 or 13 years, and probably years before that. Interestingly enough, Dawn Clark Netsch, in her campaign for governor, had espoused this very same plan. Jim Edgar, in the campaign, opposed it, and then he adopted it after he had been elected governor. He adopted it in the middle of his second term. So these are not new ideas. What is new now is that because of an enormous budget crisis for the state, which has been brewing for years but made so much worse by the recession, now something has to happen, and the door has been opened to an income tax increase. So the short answer to your question, we're pushing for legislation that provides an increase from 3 to 5%, meaning not 5%, a new level income tax, and the other reforms that I mentioned, with money gained to be allocated in a very clear and specific way to education. So funding for education through a revenue source, which comes from an income tax, a sales tax, some other factors as well.
Now, your group is trying to actually get citizens in the state of Illinois to sign on to this call for action and support this bill. And the way they can do that is to go to thecommongood.org.
That's
website,
correct.
thecommongood.org, and then you'll see a big paragraph about principles for educational funding reform, call to action, and a way to sign on so that people can put their own name behind this. And you're trying to get people who are willing from various legislative districts around the state to actually go to Springfield and talk to their legislators in support of this. Tell us about that.
Action Day, if you will, is May 12th. It's a Tuesday, May 12th. We're trying to get large numbers, of course, to go to Springfield, but we're also trying to do something quite distinctive. We're trying to ensure within those large numbers we have individuals from every state representative district. As you know, there are 59 Senate districts, which means with two representatives in each, there are 118 representative districts. And we think the breadth of involvement, the breadth of participation will be even more noticeable to the governor and to the legislative leaders and to individual legislators, of course, than simply large numbers, although we'll be delighted to have busloads of people come. So we're asking folks to sign the petition, and that is indeed, as you said, on the website, www.thecommongood.org. But then to put their hands and feet where their hearts are, and actually come to Springfield. And the day will involve gathering for a rally at 11 o'clock on the Lincoln, right near the Lincoln statue in front of the Capitol building. Then training, meaning just background on the bill, the basic techniques of talking to a legislator for those who haven't done that with their own legislators in the past, and answering any questions that people may have. There'll be a press conference, and then we'll all fan out and go to the offices and the rotunda in the Capitol and speak to our legislators. So it's the day will be well orchestrated. We'll help with transportation. We have buses going down. We have hotel rooms reserved, and I think a very clear program once people get there.
Now, you mentioned that a Republican governor, Jim Edgar, had supported this more than a decade ago, and the current Governor Quinn has, in his budget proposals, said that we need desperately to raise the state income tax from 3 to 4.5%. This is asking to raise it to 5.
That's right.
Do you seriously think in these economic times citizens will go and ask legislators to tax them even more than the governor's asking for with already an increase?
Well, I think they will, and I think there's an awfully lot, a great deal brewing behind the scenes. As you know, Senator James Meeks from Chicago introduced legislation like this 2 years ago, and I will remind you that it almost passed. Had then-Governor Blagojevich not threatened to veto the bill, it probably would have passed. The question then became, well, if he's going to veto the bill, why should legislators put their take the risk, if not putting their careers on the line, to support it, only to have it pushed back by the governor. We think there was even a veto override majority, which is larger, of course, than what's required to pass a bill without a veto. But because of the actions of then-Governor Edgar Blagojevich, we were not successful. I would like voters to realize that we're not talking just about education in a narrow sense, as fundamentally important as providing a good education for our kids is. We're talking about human capital for the state. We're talking about what it means to have a infrastructure of well-educated folks who can and be involved and support our business and entrepreneurial activities, which ultimately is what leads to prosperity in the state. If you have poor educational achievement, you're not going to have the kind of basis for growth that we have to get us out of difficult times and to remain in good times. I'd have to go through the specific numbers, but the difference between 4.5% and 5%, while it's significant, is something we have to take very seriously, because we're not going to get another chance to obtain an increase in the income tax. Probably in your lifetime and mine, Steve, we can be sure on that, and some of our younger audience, maybe. The point being, this opportunity comes along very, very rarely, and for the governor, who has this window of opportunity, not to do something that really has long-term, lasting value for the state in the way that it would advance our educational opportunities is very, very sad. I admire him for his courage in stepping forward at all, although, frankly, courage here is born of necessity. He's not going to get a balanced budget, which the Constitution requires, unless he does increase income taxes. He knows that, so he should do it the right way.
We're talking with Al Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, the Executive Director of Protestants for the Common Good, by telephone in Chicago. TheCommonGood.org is where you go online to find out more about the principles of education funding reform and a call to action that this statewide group is asking citizens to participate in. Let me give phone numbers so that people who are listening to this program may call in with comments or questions. And, of course, we're heard in Indiana as well as in Illinois. And although this is mainly a concern in Illinois today, it may well be in Indiana tomorrow. So let me let listeners participate. The number in Champaign-Urbana here at the University of Illinois, where this program originates, 333-9455. We'll get you in touch with our technical director, Kyle Crohe, and she'll put you in line to be on the air with our guest, Al Sharp. If you're listening where that's a long-distance call, we have an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. So 333-WILL or 1-800-222-WILL. I see we have a caller already. Great. Line number one, you're on the air with our guest, Al Sharp. Go ahead.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
He's talking about, or you're both talking about, a further increase in the income tax. I think it's outrageous even that Governor Quinn is asking for an increase at all in these hard times. It is outrageous that the legislators are allowing themselves to get a pay increase because they're refusing to vote on it. And at the same time, there's this proposal for an increase in taxes. Now, you're asking for an even further increase. There is plenty of money if we start cutting the, I'll use the word, the pork in the state projects that go to individual legislatures' districts. There's lots of money being wasted. There's lots of boards that don't need to exist. There's lots of legislators who are using the money to pad themselves, to give themselves pensions. We have these people being appointed to increase their pensions. We have a state airplane. I think that there shouldn't be any increase in taxes, and I think there are lots of other people who believe that and who will fight it. I think any legislator who votes for an increase will face people who are very angry at them, and they will have elections to face. Now, I know this, the assembly The House of Representatives, like in this district, Naomi Jacobson, will face an election within 2 years, in less than 2 years. The senator, state senator, is longer than that. But there are people who are not going to be very happy about it. And I think this issue that you're bringing up is really not something that we, the people, can afford at this hard time. So I'll listen to your comments off the air. Off the phone. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you for the question. I would respond first by saying that we do have a constitutional requirement to balance the budget. And one of the questions one normally would get, and you implied it when you said in these hard times, is why an income tax increase as opposed to reducing expenditures, assuming the possibilities for expenditure reductions were there, as you say, and I would take issue with your characterization of how much we could cut and what we could cut. But assuming that, you're going to hurt the economy more and take more money out of the economy by reducing expenditures than you are by increasing taxes. We have to balance a budget. There are only two ways to do it, and you've stated both of them. Increase revenues, which is what we're proposing, or cut expenditures. And if you cut expenditures when you have to balance a budget, you're going to do more to deflate the economy in a recessionary time by cutting jobs even more than we already have. Then you're going to hurt the economy by raising taxes, and I would argue in the long run you're going to help the economy. So that's the first point. On the question of how much money there is to cut and how much we already tax our people, this is not widely known, but our total state and local tax burden as a percentage of personal income, as a percentage of personal income, makes us 45th in the nation. We are not overtaxing people in Illinois now. Now, as far as expenditures go, we rank 42nd in spending among states. We are not even towards the middle on either how much we are taxing or how much we are spending. I don't know how many airplanes you'd want to cut to find $11 billion or how many commissions you'd want to cut to find $11 billion, but I will tell you this. I do know a fair amount about human services in this state, and they are running on vapors. Our prison system, which is in corrections, but it's a form of human services, is running mostly on overtime. Under Governor Blagojevich, cuts were made repeatedly, not so much out of choice, but because they couldn't come together on how to create a state budget. And so in these stalemate times, budgets were cut. And so we're wasting money by spending it on overtime because we don't even have a base level of employees to provide the essential services. So I do disagree that you're going to find the kind of pork that you think is there. I understand why you might think it. It's a very common thing to say about government, but I think we've moved far beyond that in Illinois.
We're talking with Al Sharp, the Executive Director of Protestants for the Common Good, about their current proposal to create some money to balance out the educational funding disparities that are in this state from district to district. By calling for a tax increase and by taxing services as well as goods. If you'd like to learn more about this, go to thecommongood.org online, and you can find out information that way. If people do not have access through a computer, Reverend Sharp, how may they get this kind of information? Is there a phone number they could call, an address they could write?
312-223-9544, extension 226. I'm a reasonably busy guy, but I'd be happy to take the call, and that's the main number, 312-223-9544, and then my own number is 226, but that's the office number. Our hard copy mailing address is Protestants for the Common Good, 77 West Washington Street, Suite 1124, and the zip is 60605, I think. You know, you may have to give me a minute to find that. 60602.
And that's in Chicago.
That's in Chicago.
Yeah. So that's 77 West Washington, Suite 1124, Chicago 60602, or call 312-223-9544. Ask for Al Sharp or extension 226 online, thecommongood.org. for more information. I might just remind listeners that about a month ago, we had on this program for an hour, again, answering questions and describing the state of the finances in Illinois, Ralph Martiri. And he also is part of this movement for education funding reform in the state of Illinois, and in fact helped write the legislation for it for the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. So this is a concern, and as Reverend Sharp said, a moral issue when you have this kind of disparity.
Could I comment further, Steve,
sure.
In response to the caller about pork in the budget? You're mentioning Ralph Martiri, who's a good friend we worked very closely with, and you're quite correct in saying he's drafting the legislation that we're talking about. He had a symposium in Chicago, and Senator John Cullerton, the new Senate president, came and spoke, and he pointed out that in approximately $54 billion state budget, about the general fund for that, in other words, the amount that you have some discretion over that doesn't go to capital projects and other earmarked funds, is about $28 billion. Of that amount, and keep in mind that we have a deficit that all legislators agree on. I haven't heard really anybody in any convincing way say that it's less than $11 billion out of with a discretionary general fund amount of $28 billion. Of that $28 billion, Senator Cullerton, these are my figures, he pointed out, $11 billion goes to education in some form already, from preschool to through higher education, university, college, and university education. $11 billion, now we're up to $22 billion, goes to mandated human services activities, needs, programs. Those you don't have a lot of discretion over those. The remaining $6 billion, and remember we've got an $11 billion deficit now, $3 billion goes to human services programs staffed by individual state employees. And the remaining $3 billion, that's all that's left for the rest of government. So where are you going to find $11 billion by cutting commissions in airplanes? There's always some pork, of course. Find me a private enterprise, a well-run private enterprise, the best-run private enterprise that couldn't make some cuts at the margin. But you're not finding the amount of money that is being talked about here. That's the first answer. And the second thing is you need money for education. We are underfunding education. So how can it seems to me out of balance to get concerned about some of the other areas that we talk about when perhaps our most essential function is drastically underfunded, not only slightly underfunded, but profoundly underfunded and has been for years.
We are getting close to halfway through our program here on Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the programs here on WILL, which is the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Heard on 580 AM, 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. We're heard at from 5 to 6 p.m. each Sunday night after All Things Considered and before This American Life. This is a live call-in program, and we're eager to have listeners participate, ask questions, make comments. The numbers are 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere 222-9455. That's a 800 number. So that's a toll-free call. Perhaps you're listening at will.illinois.org. You can do that via your computer anywhere in the world, really, and call us within the continental U.S. at 1-800-222-9455. And I'm told that people around the world can use Skype and do it. I don't know how to do that, but I understand even they could participate. So we are eager to have your participation. Coming up next week on All Things Considered, Keeping the Faith, a poet, Jeannie Murray Walker, will be our guest. Her newest book is just out this year. It's called New Tracks, Night Falling. That's Jeannie Murray Walker, whose last book was published by University of Illinois Press. This one is not, but it's equally good, I think. I've read it already and encourage listeners who might want to pick it up this week and have it in front of you as she reads some of those poems and talks about them. Again, the title, New Tracks, Night Falling by Jeannie Murray Walker. She'll be talking to us from Philadelphia by phone. And the following week, May 10, we're continuing our series on the value of music. This program talks about religion, spirituality, ethics, and also values. And we've had a request to have two of our former guests come back. And that's Jean Redpath, the famous Scottish singer, soloist, and a local friend of hers, Julie Byler, who is the director of the Chorale here locally in central Illinois. And we're calling this The Singing Voice, Alone and Together. And last time Jean was on, she sang a little bit for us, and this time we might even have a duet with Jean and Julie. So we're looking forward to that. That's next week, May 10, here on Keeping the Faith. And by the way, Julie Byler's director of the Chorale, which is having its spring concert, which is free, on Saturday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, Illinois. That's a free concert, and they'll be singing music by Brahms and Samuel Barber and several contemporary composers, as well as having Molly Netter as a guest soloist, a former scholarship winner. The Chorale provides these free concerts and asks people to make donations that they can then pass on to young singers before they go on to college and their musical careers. So that's May 2nd. Also on May 2nd, I should mention again that one of our former guests from just last week, Professor Donald McKim, will be speaking here at the university on Friday, May 1st, at the Rare Books Room at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 500th anniversary of the birth of John Calvin. And then on Saturday, May 2nd, at the First Presbyterian Church in Urbana on Green Street at 9:30 in the morning and again at 1:30 in the afternoon. If people would like to reserve a lunch, that's call the church at 367-8357. That's 217-367-8357 if they would like to reserve a lunch for that Saturday, May 2nd, between the two lectures by Donald McKim. Well, we have several callers waiting to speak with our guest today, Al Sharp. Let's go to line number one. I'll just remind people to keep your comments short because we have a lot of people waiting to call to talk. Go ahead, line number one.
Hi, I'm calling from Urbana.
Sure.
Governor Quinn's proposal, along with increasing the income tax rate, boosted the personal exemption so that people at the poverty level and somewhat above that will, in fact, have lower income tax. Lower total state income taxes.
Yes.
Does your proposal also have that provision? I didn't hear you.
Yes, it does. It does it with a different term. It does it through tax credits, but the impact is very much the same and profoundly important. Thank you for that observation. And maybe this is too long an answer. So the short answer to your question is yes, it does. And the context in which both Governor Quinn's proposal and the bill that we're espousing does what you suggest is terribly important because we are very regressive in Illinois taxes. The lowest 20% of the income population pay 12% of their income in taxes. The top 1% pay 6%. The next 15% pay about 8% of their income in taxes. So if you're poor, you pay proportionately more, i.e. it's regressive in the amount of tax you pay. And at both proposals, Governor Quinn's and ours, will have approximately an equal impact in correcting. And this is a faith show, this profound injustice. So thank you for asking that.
Thank you for that question. Let's go to our toll-free line number four. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Bob, I'm on the interstate, so I just want to make one short comment and then two very short questions. It sounds like a good proposal. It's something that's been needed for a long time, and I think that it's a job creator. I mean, if more people are getting good educations, they're going to be creative and intelligent, and many of them are going to want to create businesses. So it seems like it's a positive for the economy. Just like a lot of people would like to start businesses if they have health care, but they can't because they can't give up the kind of health care they have that's tied to a job they're working for somebody else. The questions I have, one is, I'm wondering, one, your organization, how long has it been in existence? And two, the one thing I don't understand about the funding is if there's a tax increase and currently taxes are tied to property, here you talk about how the taxes, the property taxes reduced in proportion to the increase in taxes. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the question. You're cutting out a little bit on your cell phone on that last question, but I think I got it. Could you hear it okay, Al?
Yes, I could.
Go ahead.
We've been in existence since December of 1995. That was our initial rally in December of 1995. To answer your question about property tax in relation to income tax, the property tax would be reduced in low property tax areas. In other words, the mechanism would be that you would receive an income tax credit equal to the amount of the property tax reduction that you wanted to have. That property tax reduction would occur in the 60% of the areas or neighborhoods where you currently have low property values, in other words, in lower income areas. The total revenue increase, therefore, would come because of the dollars you would get through in higher income tax, but the impact of that higher income tax would be reduced by a reduction in the property tax in lower income, lower wealth areas.
We have other callers waiting.
Can I make one more comment on that?
Of course.
Steve, I'm sorry to go on so long, but
no,
when this legislation has been proposed in the past, and as I say, it's been around for so long, and it's got to happen now, people would say, well, you know, we won't really see a reduction in the property tax. That's why I use the kind of technical term a tax credit on your total state income tax, because you will see the reduction in property taxes where it occurs. If you're in a lower-income area, it won't occur in all parts of the state, but in lower-income neighborhoods and areas, you will actually see that tax credit. So you will know that the property tax has been reduced and that it you'll be able to track it forever into the future. In other words, it's not some vague promise that people think won't occur as part of this total package.
Let's go to line number two, and I'll remind people, if you want to be part of the conversation, give us a call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Line number two, you're on the air with Al Sharp.
Hi, my name's Claire, and I'm calling from Decatur, and I just wanted to thank you for calling to attention the disparity in how much you spend in the schools, because I know, as a young person, I just graduated from MacArthur in 2000. It really kind of hurts when people have this knee-jerk reaction to raising taxes, because it really makes kids feel like we're not cared for and we're very disenfranchised. I know in 2000, the school funding in my district went up for a referendum and lost, and there was a lot of anger in our school. They're talking about cutting sports and arts program, and this is in a school where the jazz band is consistently named one of the top in the country. And I just know that when people are arguing against raising taxes to pay for more education, it really makes kids feel like we shouldn't care about our education when the voters aren't. So, but I also realize that property taxes in our area is like for fixed income folks and everything is a very difficult issue. So I just wanted to thank you and just let people know that it's really important for young people to get the funding they need for their education.
Well, thank you for that call. And again, just to emphasize, probably in your neighborhood, you'd have to talk to Ralph Martiri, who has all the maps. He's head of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, and he's at the center of drafting this legislation. But I would be sure that there would be a property tax swap, if you will, a reduction to mitigate the effect of the increase in the income tax in your area. Some of you may know, I don't know, I assume this news is statewide, if not nationwide, Senator James Meeks, who may sponsor this bill, took some kids from his own Chicago neighborhood up to Winnetka, which is a very high property tax suburb of Chicago.
And James Meeks is a pastor on the south side of Chicago.
Side of Chicago, state senator who's been pushing for this bill for 6 years. And he didn't do it with anger or hostility in his heart. I know him well enough to say that. But he thought there'd be great, quote, educational value in having the kids in his neighborhood who are struggling probably for music, art, gym, and not just those programs as important as those are, but some other basic education programs, languages, probably certain kinds of math programs, a full array of programs, see what's available in wealthier suburban areas in great extreme. And I'll tell you, I talked to some of the folks who on both sides of that exchange, and both came out richer in their perspective. It opened the eyes of folks in Winnetka about what they had and why they had it in a way that they'd never seen it before. And that's no criticism of them. It's simply saying that they have opportunities that other kids don't, and this was a way of making it real and making it vivid. And I think it was a very healthy experience.
We have a caller waiting patiently on line number 3. You're on the air finally with Al Sharp. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Steve from Charleston. And I just like his input on the matter of what funding is available from the lottery, the state lottery.
You know, I'm not well informed on that. I just don't know how much goes in now. So I'm going to have to beg off of that regretfully. I'll find out, but I don't know.
Let me give the caller and others who are interested in that question a couple places to check. We did have an hour interview, as I mentioned earlier, with Ralph Martiri from the Center of Tax and Budget Accountability back in, let me find the exact date. It was March 22nd here on Keeping the Faith. So you can go online to will.illinois.edu. Go to AM and then check on Keeping the Faith, and you'll see a little search box there, and you can just type in Martiri, M-A-R-T-I-R-E, and it'll pop up where he was, or you can go to March 22nd on Keeping the Faith, and you can listen to that program, and he does talk about that, as if my memory serves. And the other way to find out about that would be through by going to the website for Ralph Materi's organization. So again, that's the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. If you put that in your Chicago, put that in your search engine. He has that kind of information on their very detailed website. So that's one way to find out some of that information.
I do have one thought that doesn't answer the question directly, but what I hear all the time, I was at a church in Kenwood on the south side of Chicago this morning. We were gathering signatures for our petition, and let us not forget, Steve, we want your listeners to sign our petition, which is on our website. We're going to take it to the legislature in addition to gathering the folks we talked about on the event on May 12th. But in this church this morning, a distinguished gentleman came up to him, and he said, he said they promised more money to education when the lottery was put into effect, and the money never got there. They just cut other programs. They took the lottery money and didn't put it in education. They put it to other programs which we needed but which were cut, and we didn't end up any better ahead. Well, I think it's fair to say, and you can check with the author of the legislation, that that cannot happen this time given the way the bill is going to be drafted, because the bill increases the basic foundation level that the state spends on education. So the tax money will be translated into into an increase in what is called the foundation level, the level, the minimal level that the state spends on each student. Right now, that is horrendously low. We are the lowest in the country. And again, we're not talking about the middle. We're not even talking about the margins at the lowest. We are the lowest state in the country. In the amount of state revenue that is allocated to education. We provide only 28% of our educational needs through our state revenue. And the way we do that is because we are among, if not the highest in the nation, on the degree of our reliance on the property taxes. These aren't even close calls. But to come back to your caller, this will not be an instance where the money is not directed state does not get to the purpose for which it is being promised. And I think there's a widespread sense that that happened when the lottery bill passed a while back.
I do remember that occasion, and although technically the money from the lottery, raised by the lottery, did go to the education in the state, they then took away other monies that were already coming there from other pockets within the state budget, and so it had no significant net effect. This legislation would, as the Reverend Sharp points out. Let me give again the way people who would like to sign on to this in support of this action may do so. Go online to thecommongood.org. That's all one word, thecommongood.org. And then look for, right on the front page, first page, Principles of Education Funding Reform. And it says a call to action. And it says specifically what you're supporting. And then it gives you an opportunity to put your name in support of this, this legislative action, which Republicans and Democrats have supported in the past and are supporting now. But any time there's a call for a change in the tax structure, people get very nervous. So, and of course, there are differences of opinion about how best to accomplish good ends. But if this makes sense to you, please participate in that way. If you don't have online access, you may call Protestants for the Common Good, this organization in Chicago, although it is statewide. Its offices are in Chicago. Reverend Al Sharp is the executive director. You may call him at 312-223-9544, and then extension 226. Or you may write 77 West Washington, Suite 1124, Chicago 60602.
Steve, could I make one other comment just about the Action Day itself?
Of course.
I made passing reference to the fact that, of course, we want large numbers of people in Springfield, and we think that's going to happen. But we want to do something very strategic, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program. We want to have individuals from each state representative district. And you mentioned that our offices are in Chicago, so naturally we're best known in churches that we can reach by driving or doing personal education programs and outreach in the Chicago metropolitan area. Since we're 13 years old, we're certainly very well known in the state legislature, and we have many friends throughout the state. But I especially value the chance to be talking with your listeners today because you were in districts that whose voices would be especially important on this Action Day. And if any of you can come to Springfield, if you can recruit friends from your districts, really from the north central part of the state down to the southern border, it would just help our cause enormously.
And that's Tuesday, May 12th.
Tuesday, May 12th.
A rally at 11 o'clock in front of the state capitol building at the Lincoln statue, and then a little bit of giving out of materials that could be helpful as you talk to legislators. And if you've never done that before, some ideas on how best to do it.
Exactly.
So you would like to know who's going, if possible, Al.
Yeah,
so
if people, you feel you could come, sure. Just give us a call. Let us know where you live. And we've got maps in our offices, and we're filling in the gaps. And some of you might help us do that. And we know this is important. Legislators listen when folks from their districts are there. And just close your eyes for a minute and imagine you're being in the Democratic caucus or the Republican caucus, and somebody says, hey, you know, someone from my district came into my office, and then someone else says, my gosh, someone came from my office and came to my office, and then someone else says, well, somebody came to my office. If they're all saying that, it's going to be very, very important, because that doesn't happen very often on virtually any issue, and we can make that happen on May 12th, and that's our goal.
So again, call 312-223-9544. Is there a email address that people might also use?
I just use mine. It's Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, no E, S-H-A-R-P, at, and then thecommongood.org.
Great. We have another caller on our local line. That's 333-9455. Line number one, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. This line one?
Yes, you are. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. I've called two or three different times about this. On the Chicago Board of Trade, 2 years ago, they done 9 billion, 100 million trades. 2 years ago, or a year ago, they done 9 billion, 200 plus million trades. Last year, they exceeded that. If I go out here and I buy 100 shares of stock at $50, that's $5,000, $75 commission, $75, and transaction fee is $5.50. There is no transaction fee on the New York or Chicago Board of Trade. If you would put one lonely dollar in every transaction, that would be $9 billion, $200 plus million last year that you folks could fund these schools with. I pay 65 cents of every dollar in school tax, and I can't afford no more, bub. And I don't need no more tax increase, because if I recall right, the accountant says something like 5% of the people say pay 60% of the tax.
Thank you for your call. Could you hear that okay, Al?
I could. And I wonder if the gentleman has talked to anyone about his proposal and gotten reactions to it. My guess is that the Board of Trade would not be hospitable to that, but it's a new idea to me. I haven't heard it. As far as the tax burden question, I can only tell you that our taxes are regressive in Illinois, and the burden falls heavily on the poor, and this would help to correct that, and that the share of revenue raised through local and state property taxes is among the lowest in the country. So the gentleman may feel burdened. We all feel burdened by our taxes, but I think we have to step back and, if I could invoke the name of our organization, think about how the common good is served. And I think if you look at what we're paying now and what is needed and what the fair distribution is, you'll support this increase.
What successes has your organization, the Protestants for the Common Good, had with the legislature in your 13 years of existence?
We have, I think, a very strong record of accomplishment. We have helped to fight for an increase in the Illinois minimum wage. We brought that forward 2 years ago. We helped to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation by adding sexual orientation to the Illinois Human Rights Act. We have passed housing legislation that makes it possible to subsidize landlords in high-income areas so that lower-income individuals can have more access to jobs. As you know, often in the wealthier suburban areas, that's where the job growth is, and the folks that need those jobs very often live far away and have no way of getting to them. So we've supported transportation to make that possible, and then actual lower rental opportunities for folks in higher-income areas. We've had success also on the city and on the county level. We helped to pass a bill which in the Cook County Board of Commissioners that creates an independent management board for Cook County healthcare, so that one of the largest healthcare systems in the country stands more chance of being run in a professional and competent way. And in the city council, we passed what is called a housing set-aside ordinance. Again, in the area of housing, which requires developers to provide low-income housing in a number of units of any larger development. So at the state level, at the county level, and the city level, I think we've had a real impact.
We have another caller waiting on our toll-free line, line number 4. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest Al Sharp from Protestants for the Common Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, this whole tax thing is always so difficult because, I mean, some people, nobody likes to pay taxes. But I think sometimes we get further here if people kind of discuss more what the taxes are being spent on, because a lot of people don't like paying taxes because of what they see it being spent on. When you see free ball stadiums being built for the Bears and the Cardinals and Home Depot getting our tax money and McDonald's getting our tax money, it pisses people off, and they just figure, well, I have no influence over that, so the best thing to do is just deny them any taxes, and then they won't be able to waste my money. So I think you kind of got to look at both sides of this. I mean, it's how it's being spent, not how much we're being taxed on. Europeans aren't nearly as upset about taxes, and they pay a lot more taxes than we are, but they're not as upset because they see this money being spent on things that they like. Whereas here, we tend to see it being, I think the word is stolen, really.
Well, thanks for the comment.
Well, I'm not an expert on how the Bear Stadium was financed. And I really can't comment on that. I can comment on all the essential state services that aren't being met in any adequate way, and I consider education funding central to that. It's awfully hard to prove a negative and to say that if we just didn't spend money on the things that are mentioned, we would be in that much better shape as a state is hard to demonstrate. You'd have to go through the individual examples that the gentleman's raised, and I welcome others helping you do that. But as I read the large needs in the state and the revenue sources that are available, this tax increase is necessary. It's a shame when small matters of waste or perhaps misallocation in some cases, and I don't deny those exist, make us so angry or so frustrated that we don't see the bigger picture. And I would simply call upon the larger view to the extent that we can emotionally and intellectually get ourselves there, because I think that's really what we have to focus on. And I'd be as angry as our callers are on examples of waste or simply things that are put forward with revenue sources that aren't appropriate for those uses as he is. If he thinks they all add up to the argument that we shouldn't be doing what we're talking about here, I'll respect him as a person without agreeing with his views.
We're talking with Al Sharp, the executive director of Protestants for the Common Good, a statewide organization that's concerned with a number of social issues and tries to educate and do some lobbying about that those concerns from a moral and ethical standpoint. Protestants for the Common Good is 13 years old, as you mentioned. You are the founding director. What were you doing before you took on this task?
Well, I was actually the chief financial officer at the University of Chicago until 1994, and then just stopped walking into the administration building and went to Divinity School on the same quadrangle and graduated from Divinity School 2.5 years later. And just at the time, and it might seem providential, as Protestants for the Common Good was being formed, one of my professors was one of the founders. The minister where I was doing field work in downtown Chicago was another one of the founders, and seemed like the most natural God-given opportunity in the world.
Now, as chief financial officer for the University of Chicago, how long had you been doing that?
I did that for 14 years, really the entire time of the presidency of a person for whom I have profound respect, Hannah Gray, came in as one of her first appointments and stayed through her entire term.
And what was your training for that kind of work?
Well, I'd actually run the Department of Public Aid. They do have different names, public welfare, if you will, in Massachusetts. My background, my training is not as an accountant, but as a in the field of public policy. But I soon learned that in any public arena that you work, you need to know how the numbers work and what the budgets are. So I got some exposure and experience and training in that area. So that was that combination of things that hopefully prepared me for what I did next.
Where did you get your education?
I went to the Graduate School of Public Affairs, the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton University.
Where did you grow up?
I can't tell you how nice it feels to be touching at least some Indiana communities. I was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, 711 East 34th Street, born in Methodist Hospital. We have a home in Michigan where my parents spent the summers as I was growing up, but I moved from Indianapolis to Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, when I was 8 years old, but I'm a Midwesterner.
What did you do right after Princeton?
I actually went to work for, it was a wonderful first job. I went to work in something, a new group agency called the State Department of Higher Education in New Jersey. There are many parallels to Illinois. We had a set of teacher training in state colleges. We had a university that was a Rutgers University that was not providing medical education in New Jersey. We had a set of community colleges, and this department was created to provide coherence and progressive developments in the system of higher education. So, and I was the assistant to someone who had the grand title of chancellor, and so my first job was just a dream job to look at higher education.
And why would you go from a presumably reasonably well-paid job as CFO of the University of Chicago to Divinity School and then to run a nonprofit where you get a minimal salary?
Well, you know, I would call it the best form of midlife crisis. I'd tried Divinity School at Union Theological Seminary in New York back in the right after I graduated from college, and was happy, but just got called to other things. Had a chance to teach in the New York City school system, then got off into the kind of public affairs background that I've told you. But as I got into my middle and late 40s, I realized, you know, if I don't make some basic decisions now, I'll never have the chance again. And so I kind of, as I say, slipped over to Divinity School kind of unconsciously, knowing that I would seek ordination. So I would like to think it was a call prompted in the secular terminology that I described.
And you're an ordained minister in what denomination?
The United Church of Christ.
I'm afraid we're going to have to stop there. We've had a very busy hour with our guest, Al Sharp. Reverend Sharp is the Executive Director of Protestants for the Common Good. You can learn more about Principles for Education Funding Reform at their website, thecommongood.org. Listeners who support that are encouraged to sign on and perhaps come to the rally day May 12, Tuesday in Springfield at 11 o'clock and then talk to legislators May 12, Tuesday. Let me announce again that coming up here in Champaign-Urbana on May 1st and 2nd, Donald McKim will be speaking, celebrating the 500th anniversary, the birth of John Calvin, a Protestant theologian, at the University Rare Book Room on Friday, May 1st at 3 p.m. and at the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana on Saturday, May 2nd at both 9:30 and 1:30. Listeners who'd like to reserve a lunch may call the church, 217-367-8357. And that evening, May 2nd, the chorale will be performing at Faith United Methodist Church, 1719 South Prospect in Champaign at 7 p.m. That's Saturday, May 2nd. Julie Byler is the director of The Chorale. It's a free concert, and there'll be music by Brahms and Samuel Barber and Elner Daly and Brad Ellingbow, Robert Ray, John Rutter, Mack Wilberg. It should be a wonderful choral concert. Molly Netter will be one of the guest soloists, as well as two local scholarship winners who are still in high school. So very good choral and instrumental music Saturday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church, a free program. People may make contributions. It will go to support further scholarships through the chorale. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.